one of the problems we have when we're thinking about this stuff is we expect the stories, we expect stories to not be contradictory. And we expect explanations of the world to not be inconsistent. And we expect there not to be more than one explanation. But one of the things that's really interesting about the mythopoeic viewpoint, to me as a poet and as a philosopher and as a person of spiritual temperament, one of the things that's really interesting about the mythopoeic is that you never... Making a good story is just making a good story, and they generally are going to end up in contradictions. And each might actually tell a different aspect of a story that you wouldn't have gotten if the story wasn't retold that way, or if a different story wasn't told at all, right? Okay. Like in the Abrahamic tradition, where does the creation of the world happen? In the Abrahamic tradition, there's a book in the Torah. It's the first book of the Torah. In English, we call it Genesis. Okay? How many times does God create the world in Genesis? How many times does God create the world in Genesis?
Once.
There's two creation stories in Genesis. And the interesting thing there is they're right next to each other. They're not like separated. Or whatever. I mean, maybe Connor, you can make a point that there's a third creation after the flood or something like that, like he recreates or something. But there's actually two times that in Genesis. The first book of Genesis gives you, which is the one that we know the first words of, right? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and God moved upon the face of the waters. Not the whole, let there be light. Okay. But then the story that we most associate with creation, because it has to do with us, is the Garden of Eden. But the Garden of Eden is a second story. It's a second creation story. So you actually have two creation myths right next to each other in the first two chapters of the first book of the Hebrew Bible. And I think that one of the things, again, this notion of the mythopoeic, people are always attempting to come up with a better narrative of order, of the natural order, or of the world order. They're always trying to come up with a better narrative. And in that functionalist sense of religion, of where religion comes from, you get this idea that in one sense, religions provide cosmological tales. That means accounts of the cosmos, accounts of the world order, right? And often do this through what's called cosmogonies, which means the genesis of the cosmos, the beginning of the cosmos, or of the world order. Okay? People are always doing this. And in the functionalist view, religion says that religion provides these cosmologies, these cosmogonies, these origins of the world, or origins of certain practice. Right? In order to help us understand our situation and understand where we are. There's a wealth of stories in India. Not just the two largest epic poems ever written in human history, the Mahabharata and the Ramayana. Huge. Right? Like the Iliad and the Odyssey, the Western counterparts, the Iliad, the Odyssey, and Virgil's Aeneid, which is a Latin document. They could all be fit into the Mahabharata and there'd still be more writing. It's huge. It's a big ass story. So you have these two epics. And they got a lot of stories in them. But then you also have what's interesting. So from around 400 CE, they captured and they wrote down what's called the Puranas. The Puranas are all of these cosmological and cosmogonic tales that tell us about how the gods did this, where the gods came from. A lot of them are really popular stories. Now this story of Hanuman, all these cartoons of Hanuman that are inside this series here, they actually all come from the Ramayana, but they also, some of them are supplemented by Puranic tales. Tales about how, you know, Hanuman was born, or where did Rama come from? This word mythopoeic means, who knows what the Greek word poesis means? Who knows what the Greek word poesis means? You know what? Okay, so obviously it's the root for our word poetry. Okay? But it actually is the Greek word for to make. Poesis is making, right? It's making by sound, it's making by words, it's making by stone.
To make narrative.
So in this sense, it means it basically means to make a narrative, mythopoeic. Generally, we'd say it's because of the poetic, we'd say it has a kind of poetic element to it or whatever in our normal sense of poetry. But basically, the mythopoeic is coming forward and making a beautiful narrative. Right? Have you ever tried to make your own narrative of the origin of the world? Probably not. It's not the sort of thing you normally do. Right? But here's a challenge between now and tomorrow. I want you to, at some point tonight, or this afternoon, whatever, I want you to be thinking. And I want you just to come up with a story about let's think of something cool. Where did the moon come from? Come up with a mythopoeic story of where the moon came from. Why is there a moon? Okay? Just think about it. You don't have to answer now. You don't even have to write it down. It's what we'll start with tomorrow. Where did the moon come from? Why is there a moon? I actually did this experiment one time many years ago when I was helping my mentor teach, and the kinds of stories that people came up with were actually kind of badass. And two or three of them stuck in my head because they were so cool. Right? Anyway, so expand your mind a little. Think about it. You can be quasi-scientific, completely scientific, but with a little poetic twist to it. You can be wholly mythological.
time, just kind of like come up with something.
But why do we want to know where we come from? Matt, why do we want to know where we come from?
Good question.
You're a good Denny boy. Why do we want to know where we come from? Why do we think that?
I guess it's part of our culture, maybe, and not like everyone's. But
actually, it's pretty much universal. Humans always have this thing; they want to know where they came from.
Well, didn't you say that, like, in India or like Hinduism, they believe that it's always?
Well, they believe the Vedas actually are might always have been. There's one form that says that they always have been, but the Vedas at least tell us the story of where we come from, right? Or they begin telling. So the idea here would be that all human cultures is very universal. It's like they always have an origin story. So we always want to know where we come from. Now there's that word origin, and that's a really important word. That's an extremely important word, and I could spend a little bit of time talking about the fact that the word origin has been, I don't want to commit the etymological fallacy, you know me now, but the word origin has come to be very stripped of its original meaning, and partially because of one person named, what do we call this? What? The Cartesian coordinate plane. We can even draw one through here, right? What's that? It's the origin, right? And notice this. Notice what's interesting about this origin. It's 0, 0, 0. Yeah. Maybe like the beginning. But now let's do an etymology of the word origin. What if I told you that this word is the same as this word, and it's the same as the word for, it's the same as the word Genesis?
Can we also let me see the end of things? You see people die, you see things break.
Sure.
Well,
we want to know the origin because we see the end, or we see the end and we want to know the origin, or, you know, whatever. We see the origin and we want to know the end. So the two seem to be connected to each other, right? So we have this word Genesis. What does this word mean, you think? Ori. And it doesn't mean cookie. Although Hanuman might think it would. No. Doesn't mean cookie. So, Connor? What? No, original actually comes from this. So, what? Who said that? Somebody said to Kiki. Did you say something?
Yes. Yeah,
what?
To speak
or oral? No. That would be a folk etymology. Genesis of speech. There you go, David. There's your folk etymology. Might take your claim to fame. No. What? One or four first? No. Okay. I'll stop the suspense. What did we used to call China?
Oriental.
Yeah, Orient.
Orient.
Chinese is what we used to call Oriental, yeah, China, right. Which we don't anymore. The Orient. Why did we call it the Orient? Kind of dumb for us to call it the Orient, actually, because whenever you say, what direction is China in, everybody points west. But when you were in Europe, where was China? It was east.
And that's what this word means.
Origin, it means Genesis in the east. Now notice why the reason I brought up the Cartesian coordinate plane and why I say these words kind of become denuded to a certain extent is we actually think very much in terms of the Cartesian coordinate plane at this point. Right? And the origin in the Cartesian coordinate plane has no, it has no direction. It's 0, 0, 0. There's no east, north, east, or west. Right? But originally the notion meant origin in the east. Genesis in the east. Now why would we choose Genesis in the east as origin? What happens in the east that's so important? The sun rises. Exactly. We have a desire to know our origin, which means we have a desire to know where we come from. And thinking about our origin always connects us to certainty, wanting to be certain, right? It's actually wanting to be certain about the world. Remember, orderly exchange. We want a narrative of orderly exchange. The narrative of orderly exchange makes us feel certain about things. I know where I come from. Right? I know where I come from. Just like the sun rises in the east. But then there's this other issue of we know where we came from. We also know where we're going. Right? We're all going to the western lands, as the Egyptian called it. So sun sets in the west. Right? Sun sets in the west. We want to know where we came from. We want certainty that comes from that. Because the only certainties we have is we started and we're going to stop. In the attempt to get to something really beautiful about being alive, we come up with, I'm not trying to explain them away, I'm trying to describe them. There's so many beautiful descriptions of where we come from. Right? There's so many beautiful descriptions of how we're going to get to where we're going. And they just fill up pages of fiction and poetry and myth and holy books and sacred traditions and oral traditions. And in between here and here, there's all these stories of the stuff that people are doing. Right? Of what gods are doing and nature is doing. Why do people get so, why then do you think why would people get so upset if you play too much with the stories? If you bend them a little too much.
Excuse their reality.
Huh?
Excuse their reality.
Excuse their reality. Why does it skew their reality? Yeah, the world is your beliefs. And if you've put your faith in a certain narrative of orderly exchange, and someone comes along to show you, you can twist it this way, you can twist it that way, that makes the narrative a little more uncertain. Okay. So in regard to that, this, as you were pointing out the other day, or maybe yesterday, on the, you know, how do we know that these oral stories stay fairly true? People kind of hound on each other to make sure there's not too many variations. Now, you might come up with a story, and there could be some variations off, and maybe people go off in a new direction with it. But a really interesting aspect that begins happening once the stories, and this is, I think, extremely interesting, that in oral traditions, the stories stay remarkably similar. And it's only after you start writing them that people start really getting crazy with how they interpret and how they rearrange them. And I think that that's a very telling human reaction. There's something about telling stories, right? That you might add a little bit to them. You might change this, you might change that, but you don't really change the gist of the story too much. But once the story is written down on paper, it actually has a kind of life of its own outside of it. Think about how the stories that you're told, the stories that you hear, okay, how those stories are, well, what's the difference between seeing and hearing? I mean, other than the obvious difference. Phenomenological. What do you do when you see, and what do you do, what happens when you see, and what happens when you hear? Yeah.
When you hear, you just imagine.
Okay. All right.
When you see, you stop imagining.
There. All right. Well, what else? Because you did two, yeah, do it, go ahead. What?
Interpretation.
Okay. And there's something that y'all are doing naturally in your body language that's awesome. So you're hearing and you're seeing. And you both did it and you weren't looking at each other. You're hearing and you're seeing. What's going on? Going in, I'm separated from it. When you hear, it happens in your head. When you see, you differentiate yourself. Obviously, it's still happening in your head. But the point is that just not even watching each other, right? And being from two different cultures, you did that. That's a small sample. You did the same body movements. You said hearing, going in, and seeing. I see. And you just, well, there it is over there. Oh, here it is inside, right? And it's very, I think that's just ultimately so cool. Because the idea, of course, is that when you hear something, it's happening in you. And that's not to say that you won't try to locate, because obviously you've watched me being partly deaf. Sometimes people say something and I'm trying to figure out where it's happening at. Because I hear it in my head, but I don't know where it's at. Right? But I think the keeping in mind that we tell stories, and we love people who can tell really good stories. You don't want to listen to someone who tells bad stories. And the difference between listening to someone who tells bad stories and reading a bad story, something poorly written is that when something's poorly written, you can close it and you can say, well, that's not worth my time. But when you're listening to someone tell a bad story, they're in your freaking head. It's like, get away from me. I don't even want to listen. You can't even tell a good story. Right? But when someone's telling a good story, and they're really good at telling a good story, it's like you welcome them into yourself. And so these are the kinds of ways that we should think about, you know, even the fact we seem to understand right now, we seem to know right now, that up
until about 500 years ago, nobody read silently. People read out loud if they did read. And so one of the things that was kind of interesting about that is the habit of welcoming the heard word played itself out in reading. Because so what you would do is you'd say, here's this thing, in one sense, here's this thing outside of me. I take it into myself and I speak it and it comes back. That's why I actually welcome all of y'all when you're on the Pearson thing. Just, you know, before you read anything, just take the 5 minutes and let them read it to you first. You'll have something totally different when you read it. Because now it'll be going back to something that's been in you. And now you'll see it in a different kind of critical way. Right? Well, this happens with philosophers who tend to get off track too easily. I'm going to let y'all go 10 minutes early, but I want y'all to promise me two things. Tonight, you'll come up with a story, mythopoeisis, why there's a moon. For some story involving. And two, I want you to go and I want you to get on the internet and I want you to find some Indian story, right, about, from the Puranas. Maybe what I'll do is I'll put up, look up the Puranas and then look up, this would be the search you do, Hanuman Puranas, Hanuman, birth. So do a Google search. And just find, you know, a simple retelling of the story. Puranas, Hanuman, birth. So I'm letting you go 10 minutes early with the promise you're going to do a Google search on that. And then maybe you can scribble down a couple of notes, you know, bring it in for discussion tomorrow. And I want you to do your moon mythopoeis and come on in tomorrow. All right, I'll see y'all later.